Would you join with me as I pray? O come, O wisdom from on high, embracing all things far and nigh, in strength and beauty come and stay. Teach us your will and guide our way. Amen. Louisa's life was falling apart. Her marriage was falling apart. Her faith was falling apart. She thought she had it all figured out. She thought she'd found God, or God had found her. And she had spent a lot of time in a Pentecostal church in South Australia, heavily involved. But now, with everything falling apart, she decides to take off. Initially, she only has $500, but somehow she makes it to Ireland, then Mexico, then Sweden. As everything falls apart, she has these questions kind of coming out, and she wants to try and explore them. Her number one question, which maybe is not your question, but her number one question is this: is God male? Can women be holy? How can they be if God is male? And so that's what she's searching. But underneath that question is also just a lot of confusion as she reflects on the choices she's made and where her choices have led her, and it hasn't kind of led her where she thought life would go, and she's not sure what choice to make next, like what is the right action. In other words, she is searching for wisdom. And she ends up in all the places, Bulgaria, in the city of Sofia, because she's heard this rumor that in this city celebrates the female divine. Now, I don't know that much about Bulgaria, but it was occupied for a long time by the Soviet Union, so it was part of the communist regime, kind of a brutal and sometimes paranoid regime that collapsed in 1989. And the city initially, like during that time, like had a statue honouring Lenin, but they like took it down when the Soviet Union collapsed, and they commissioned, and I think it took them a while to build it, but they commissioned this statue of a woman. So now there's this 8-metre statue of this woman made of copper and bronze. In one hand she has a wreath, and the other on her arm is an owl, both symbols of wisdom. The statue's a little bit controversial. The city's not sure if they like it or not. Some people think it's a little bit too revealing, but Louise loved this. She's like, oh, look, here is the city celebrating the female divine. And so, like, in her eagerness, she meets up with an academic who specializes in Bulgarian folklore, and she says, like, tell me more about this statue. Like, how does this statue impact how you're living? Like, holy wisdom, Lady Sophia in your city, like, how does that influence you? And the academic says, well, it doesn't really influence us. It's like just a statue. And she feels really stupid. She's like, I've been searching and feeling like God was leading me here, and there's all these signs, and now I'm like in Bulgaria, and it's cold, and I'm kind of untethered from everything I've known. And this is a quote from her. She says, I grabbed onto the ghost of an idea and bought plane tickets, then chased it through a country I didn't belong. Magical thinking created an entitlement to celestial provision. I assumed the power that ordered the universe would meet my needs. This foolish practice had led me to a town in the middle of Bulgaria with absolutely no leads. Wisdom, where are you? Do you ever find yourself asking that? Like, maybe you have a choice before you and you're not sure what the right choice is. Like, sometimes wisdom feels like it's hiding, and like it's a ghost of an idea, or someone's locked it away. Wisdom can feel really elusive, like we have to like chase it down. And in some ways, that's what it feels like when we read Matthew's gospel and hear about these magi. In a lot of ways, they echo Louise's story. They're traveling, we are told, from the east. We're not sure exactly where they are coming from, but I guess the word east suggests it's somewhere a long, long way away. So they leave their homes, they take off because they see this star, and they're like traveling, staying in like cheap motels, strange cities, eating exotic foods, striking up conversations with strangers, looking for clues. And they have this burning question. Their question is, where is this one born King of the Jews? Where is he going to be born? It's unclear why this question is really grabbed their attention. And like, unless they're Jewish, it seems like an odd thing to pursue, but they're really interested in it. Maybe underneath that question is this search for wisdom. They end up in Jerusalem and they end up in Herod's court. Herod's the kind of king of this region, of course, though he's answerable to the Roman emperor. And Herod has a reputation for being a bit of a brutal, paranoid king, especially when he feels like people might be challenging his power. So you can imagine how disturbed he and his court are by this question. But he like tries to play it cool and he's like, oh yeah, we have like old scrolls. You know, I wouldn't put much stock in them, but let's bring them out. And he does make sure that the scribes work out the answer. He's like, oh, it probably means nothing, but scribes, like, tell me, where is this king meant to be born? And they say, Bethlehem. Okay, Bethlehem. Okay, that's the answer. Yeah, well, it's probably not much. I wouldn't expect you to find anything, but why don't you go to Bethlehem and check it out? That's what he says publicly. Privately, he takes the Magi aside. He's like, and if you do find this child, this promised king, like, report back to me. Let me know because, you know, of course, I want to pay homage to this king. And so the Magi agree and they set off to Bethlehem. The Magi are chasing this idea, this question, right into a country where they don't belong. And it seems so flimsy. You know, they see a star and with that they're off. And often, I don't know about you, but often that's how I picture wisdom, as something, almost this flimsy search, this chase. And it feels like wisdom is hard to find. Like I have to go to some exotic location to find it. Although today, I think when we think exotic, we're like, yeah, the East rather than the West. The East is where we'll find wisdom. If I can just go on a spiritual pilgrimage, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that, then I'll find wisdom. But our Bibles actually give a different answer to where we might find wisdom. Our Bible has a wisdom section, and in particular, the book of Proverbs is full of all these wise sayings. And in the book of Proverbs, we hear this image of wisdom. Proverbs 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call, and does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. Beside the gates in front of the town, at the entrance of the portals, she cries out, to you, O people, I call, and my cry is to all that live. Wisdom is right here, says the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs pictures wisdom as a woman standing in a public space, raising her voice. Now, this is a little bit unusual in the ancient world. Generally, women aren't in the public space, and they're definitely not normally shouting out. But she's here and she's shouting and she says, you who are foolish, come. You who are simple, come. I want to share. There's like a real generosity of spirit here. I will share all I know to anybody who wants it, like I'm right here. This image of wisdom is kind of picked up by other writers. And there's a book, it's not in our Bibles, but it's called The Wisdom of Solomon, that's written a little bit later. And it pictures kind of similar thing, like this picture of wisdom. And then it says, wisdom has the potential to meet us in any of our thoughts. Wisdom is near. And again, it's surprising. Like this whole thing is kind of surprising. First, it's surprising to picture wisdom as a woman. It was in the ancient world, and maybe still it's surprising for us now. And so there's a lot of speculation about like what sparked this. And sometimes wisdom is maybe downplayed or forgotten about in the church because it can make us uncomfortable. It's a very unusual image for a lot of us. To the point where you might be like Louise. So Louise spent a lot of time in church and she got to the stage where she felt like that she was less than because she was a woman. That when she pictured God, she could only picture God as like being like her husband or being like the male pastor up on the stage. Now, to be clear, God is neither male nor female, right? Like God is spirit. And so every time we're talking, we're using metaphors. And so we're always limited, I guess, by that metaphor. But maybe sometimes we forget about some of the images in the Bible and we kind of diminish who God is. In a lot of ways, Louise ends up then with a really simplistic faith. So when things start to go wrong, when there's cracks, when she starts to have questions, there's no depth, there's nowhere for her to go. It's like she hasn't been taught that to have faith means that there'll be surprises. Actually, you need to make room for surprises. I think when we want to grow in wisdom, surprise is really important. And often this is when we most seek wisdom, isn't it? Like when we're in a surprising situation, when it's difficult to know what the right thing to do is, then we're like growing in wisdom. And isn't this life? Like life will be unexpected. Things will happen that we weren't planning for. Sometimes maybe things will go apart. Sometimes there'll be some surprise before us. And the book of Proverbs actually says we should be open to surprise. Surprise actually is one of the ways we grow in wisdom. And to further surprise us, this chapter continues and starts talking about wisdom in very glorious, almost divine terms. Wisdom becomes very closely associated with God. As she says, I've been here since the beginning. I am ancient. I saw, or even, I mean, it's a debate, but even I was involved in creation. As the heavens and the earth are created and the seas and the mountains, I'm there and I'm delighting in God and I delight in creation. If you're looking to wisdom, if you're looking for wisdom, why not come and speak to me? Spend time with me. And so she says this in verse 5. O simple ones, learn prudence, acquire intelligence, you who lack it. Hear, for I will speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right. For my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteous. There's nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straight to one who understands and right to those who find knowledge. That academic said to Louise, oh, holy wisdom is not something we really value in this city, or we don't pay that much attention. And in a lot of ways, she could be speaking about lots of places, right? Like even sometimes the church. Do we value wisdom? I think we value choice as a society. I think we value individuals having as much choice as possible. But we often don't give any guidance about how to make a choice. Like there's even debate, is there such a thing as good or bad choices, or is it just, you know, completely subjective? Like there's no guidance. You're kind of given this whole options out there and then you're left to figure it out. And it's a very different picture to how God speaks about wisdom. In the scriptures, wisdom is seen as a gift from God. And actually it's an invitation. You want to learn wisdom, learn the ways of God. Now, when I say learn, I don't mean like fill your head up with lots of knowledge and study really hard necessarily. It's not primarily about content. It's about learning how to be in the world and how to make good choices. And so she says the first thing you need to learn is prudence. I feel like I never hear the word prudence anymore. It's a very old-fashioned word. But medieval theologians who thought a lot about wisdom would say it's fundamental, like the most fundamental virtue is prudence. So what's prudence? Prudence is the ability to know or to discern what the right action to take is in the circumstances you're in. In many ways, it's the heart of wisdom. This is the trickiest thing, to know what the right course of action to take is. If you remember Job, the issue with Job is that the friends are saying things that sound wise, but it's not the right thing to say in that time. So they prove themselves to be not so wise. So prudence is knowing what the right thing or what the right action to say is in the circumstances you're in. To develop prudence, you need time. You need to ponder. You need to think about all the different actions you could take and maybe as far as you can see the consequences that might develop. And maybe I think that's why we do think of traveling as sometimes giving us that. You know, I don't necessarily think travel gives you wisdom, but in Louise's story, because she travels, she has time to ponder and you see her growing in wisdom. Wisdom also requires humility, to ask questions, and maybe even to listen to others, to talk to people who are different from us. That's what we see the Magi model to us, isn't it? Like they ponder that star. They consult the knowledge they know around them, and then they consult the knowledge of others, even in different cultures. They ask questions. In Proverbs 8, wisdom goes on to say, not every choice is a good choice, but as much as you are able, try to pursue what you believe to be true and good. Value wisdom. Value it even over silver or gold. Wisdom is more precious than jewels or rubies. You think, oh, really? That sounds like a big call. But Proverbs 8 says, you can see it. Like when people listen to wisdom, when rulers listen to wisdom, we see good rules, good laws being developed. When people learn and listen to wisdom, we see societies that are flourishing, where there's justice and love and truth and peace. And if you're not sure, if you're like, I'm not sure what is right and true, then the scriptures also say pray. Pray to God about it. In fact, in the lead up to Christmas, the early church would chant, and part of what they were chanting was this prayer for wisdom. They would chant, O wisdom, you came forth from the mouth of the Holy One. Mighty and sweet your ordering of life. Teach us prudence. The church asked God to be their teacher. Like, help us to discern what the right action is in the time that we find ourselves in. It was very common for people to describe Jesus as being a wise teacher, like both in his day and even today. A lot of people acknowledge that Jesus is a wise teacher. Like, you know, obviously he had disciples, and disciples are students committed to this teacher. And we remember a lot of Jesus' sayings, and we say there's wisdom here, like his stories, his questions, there's value here. But it's interesting, again, Jesus wasn't just about filling people up with information. Part of being a disciple is actually seeing what Jesus was doing and then copying. And so he says, look what I'm doing. I'm healing the sick. I'm caring for the poor. And in particular, he pointed out, look who I'm eating with. I'm eating with the sinners, you know, the people society thinks is unworthy. And then he says, wisdom will be proved right by her actions. In this subtle way, Jesus is alluding back to Proverbs 8 here, and he's saying, I am wisdom. I am wisdom embodied. I'm Sophia in the flesh. And this is what the early church would pick up on, particularly Paul. As Paul pondered who Jesus was, he says, he's not just a wise teacher. This is wisdom among us. This is the divine among us, God with us. And so we are called to learn from Jesus. And again, it's not simply about filling up our heads with knowledge, but the best way we can learn is by being in relationship with Jesus. There's an Australian theologian, Sally Douglas, who I think initially did her PhD, and anyway, she's written a lot of books looking at wisdom and how Jesus embodies wisdom. And she also talks about the importance of friendship here, and this is a quote from her. By taking seriously the importance of divine friendship and divine wisdom within the earliest church, we find clues about what is important to reclaim in our own contexts if we seek to live faithfully as Christ ones. In Jesus Sophia, we face the holy human one who seeks to make us into friends with God and who pours her wisdom within our very beings. In a sense, wisdom is very bodily. I think that's the difference sometimes between wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom should affect the way that we live and move in the world. And so Sally suggests friendship can be a really powerful way where wisdom ends up being poured into us, particularly as we become friends with people who are not like us. And we learn to see, we might say, either the image of God in every person, or we might say Christ in every person. We can grow in wisdom. We call the Magi wise, but for Matthew's first audience, they don't seem particularly wise. First, they're pagans, so, you know, we frown on that. And then they might be astrologers, and the Torah forbids divination. So they could be that, or maybe they're charlatans. Like, maybe they're fakes pretending to do supernatural stuff. Like they actually look a little bit foolish. And yet it's these foolish ones, these foreigners, who form this friendship with one another, who set off, and they go. And they go to Bethlehem, and they meet Mary and Joseph, and they see this child, Jesus. And there's a friendship. I mean, Mary and Joseph have this openness, like just letting these random strangers into their house. They welcome them. Maybe they have a meal together. Maybe they stay the night. And it says the Magi are filled with joy. Like they go, this is the right decision we've made. Here there is wisdom. Here there is truth and justice and love. And so in response, they worship this child. They bring these gifts of, you know, gold, frankincense and myrrh. And sometimes people get really obsessed with like the significance of the gifts they bring. But I think the point is, it's a surrender and acknowledgement that here is God amongst them. Just like Proverbs 8 says, like when you find wisdom, you realize it's better than silver or gold or rubies, and so you surrender it. And that's what these magi do. They give it up and they say, we have encountered wisdom and it is more valuable than the things that we have. And then they also exercise some prudence as they realize we can't go back to Herod and report what we've seen. They recognize that not everybody values wisdom, that the world can be a dangerous place, and they have this dream, and they discern from the dream that the right course of action is for them to go a different route home, that there's something special and significant going on here, and there needs to be space for God to continue to be at work amongst this family. When I think of Christmas, I think about eating. And sometimes that can be stressful. I don't always do the cooking. So if you're the one cooking and doing all the preparation, Christmas can be a really hectic time. But the point of eating is it's meant to be a time of joy. It's meant to be generosity and lightheartedness. And yet when I also think of Christmas, or even when I ask, you know, kids, like what Christmas is all about after presents, they often say it's family. Like we think of Christmas as being a time when we are with family. And that's true for a lot of us, but as Christians, we'd want to say more, that actually Christmas is about a love that extends beyond our biological family. And if we are seeking wisdom, actually maybe Jesus might lead us in surprising directions. Maybe Jesus might say, is there someone I can invite to my Christmas meal that isn't my family, who's different, who maybe is in need, maybe who doesn't have family? And when we do that, when we end up encountering strangers or people outside our immediate circle, when we have surprising gatherings when we eat together, we start to discover that God is with us. That God, in a sense, is already answering our prayers. There's wisdom already here, and it's surprising where God might lead us, but it's good. This way of living that God calls us to is good. And so we pray this. O come, O wisdom from on high, embracing all things far and nigh. In strength and beauty come and stay. Teach us your will and guide our way. Amen.